Hi, Jason. Hi, Dan. Hi, Jason.
Call recorder starting like a second late or something. It's really weird.
I started
the call.
I didn't roll. Interesting. I've noticed recently that Skype sometimes when it starts up, there's like a second or two at the beginning of the call where nobody can hear each other.
Interesting.
It's weird. I don't know. I mean, the Skype protocol seems to change without prediction. And sometimes stuff like has weird behavior for months on end and then it goes away. Like, I have no idea. I've seen any number of changes. And it's weird because, right, it's still better than so much what else is out there.
You got to stop using Skype one of these days, but it hasn't happened yet.
But there's nothing to replace it. I mean, that's the thing is like I've used and I've talked to people who've used Discord instead, and Discord has its own problems.
There's nothing to replace it that is clearly better than it,
right,
despite all of its issues. And that's the thing. Like, I think if there was something that was clearly better and didn't have all these other issues, we would, you know, I would pay, you know, I'd buy the incomparable a site license or whatever for some service that could do all those things. But I have yet to find something that solves all these problems because Skype does have a lot going for it.
Yeah,
it's got the central servers that merge everything together and send you back a stream that's everybody but you. And, you know, a lot of these other things, everybody's got different audio. They're sending it to all the different places. And so the quality goes down and it does noise canceling. It so like pulls out all the echoes and stuff. I mean, there's a lot that it does.
And I think with the amount of time and effort that's been invested into it, there's not a huge incentive for other companies to challenge it, really, because A, it's a really hard problem, as you just noted. They did all this stuff, right? And people don't necessarily want to reinvent the wheel.
Right.
And B, I mean, it's still free, right? Like, where's the upside, I guess, is the question. Because even Apple, which has done FaceTime audio for a long time, has never opened that up to multiple parties, right? Like, you can still only have a one-to-one call in FaceTime after many, many years of this. And some of their, I know they had like some patent issues and stuff like that before, but you know, there's not a lot of upside. So most of the stuff that you see come out now that's like multi-person voice chat is integrated into other stuff, right? Like Slack has voice chat now for some, I think for the paid plans, you can do multi-person. Discord has it, but it's, you know, mainly sort of, there's like gaming and chat rooms in there too. So a lot of these things like throw it in as an extra thing, but yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, there's the one that I have looked at is Zoom, which is a business video conferencing thing. But my understanding is that they do have like server based and they have recording features. And I think it works on mobile because that's the other thing that comes in. Sorry to everybody out there who's listening to us talk about this, but, you know, it is part of what we do. And for some reason, some people seem interested in it. One of the things, if I'm going to go, I can broaden this out too. It's like when you move from a piece of software, let's say, or any sort of system to a new one, you're going to take a hit because you got to get everybody up to speed. You got to get everybody the new software. Everybody's got to learn the ins and outs of the new thing. And as a result, where you go needs to be better. Like you need a clear win to go there. Either you have to get out because this thing is going to shut down, or I need to go somewhere else because it's going to be way better despite the effort we put in. And so with Skype, all the complaints that we have about it is like, I have yet to see anything that was so clearly going to be better if it worked, that it was worth the time and effort to move everybody to a new place.
Exactly. Well, and yeah, like you said, you can generalize that super far outwards. Like I was just thinking yesterday, my girlfriend and I walked down a couple houses to see an open house here for a condo that was going on sale. And it's like three houses down. It's on the first floor, like my apartment. And the building is very, very similar. And like we walked around and like, there's some nice things about this apartment, but like, this is literally a lateral move. Like,
right,
moving three doors down. It's like, and it's not that it's not substantially bigger or anything, right? Like there isn't a huge reason to do it. It's like there are some things that are nicer than my apartment, but there are a lot of things that are not. Why would I invest the time?
If you bought it, you would own it.
That's absolutely true. But the question is then, do you want to invest again? Do you want to invest your time and money into something that is only marginally better than what you have now?
Do I want to spend a lot of money and effort and stress in order to get the same thing I already have, but
be responsible for it forever.
But not have your upstairs landlord to call if something breaks. Yeah.
So the answer was probably not.
Probably not. Yeah. I see that. I'm this is the I use the Logic as an example of this a lot because I've gotten really super like optimized on Logic, but it could be any program that you use that you're super comfortable with. And then people will say, oh, there's this other program that is very similar and I hear does this one thing better. And I get that a lot with Logic where people are like, oh, well, what about Adobe Audition? And leaving everything else aside, because there are issues with the economics of it. Logic, you buy it. Audition, you have to pay for the Adobe bundle to get it. I can't. I'm so efficient with Logic. I can't imagine that if I put in the work to switch to Audition, that it could possibly be so much better so as to justify me moving to it. Like, if somebody wants to make that point and say, oh, actually, there are these five things that you do that take all this time that would just evaporate magically, then I would be interested in that. But I can't see it at this point. Right, I think it's just personal preference. But in terms of the time and stuff like that, it's like, I've already optimized. Like, it's just not going to happen.
Right. Plus, you got to invest that, like, month or two while you're editing podcasts to figure out how to do everything that you already know how to do.
A huge time investment. And would I ever get that? Would I ever save that time? And I don't actually believe that I would necessarily be any more efficient on it. And that's what I'm focused on. But the same would be true if, like, you use Microsoft Word and somebody said, well, you should just use Pages or you should use Google Docs or whatever. It's like, there's the cost of making the change that's embedded in any of those things. And so that is why people stick with old stuff. That's why old software that nobody understands. Well, okay, I'll give you one. Sixcolors.com and theincomparable.com are on movable type. So is Daring Fireball. Why movable type has not been a leading blog package for years now, for like a decade at least. Why do we still use it? And the answer is, I know it really well. Greg Noss knows it really well. It works.
Yeah.
And anywhere else we go, it's going to be a huge learning curve. And there is yet to be anything that we've seen that has made us go, oh, we need to move because of X.
More to the point, like, there's so many custom setups in the way that especially the Incomparable works. That,
yes,
you would have to figure out how to recreate all that stuff or do it in some other way.
Right.
There would be
cost. I mean, in that case, the Incomparable, like, we could use the CMS that Relay uses. We could take that code and fork that and do a version of it. But the problem is it's written in a language that Greg, who does the servers, Greg doesn't know it. So now I'm paying like probably the same developer that Relay pays. So now I'm paying money. So there's an actual cost. And then the way that system is built, and this is super in the weeds, but I think it's interesting when you're talking about weighing possibilities. The way that system is built, unless you know that code, you can't change like the templates or the design of the site. And with movable type, as primitive as it is and as wacky as it is in so many ways, like, if I want to add a new feature to Six Colors or the Incomparable, I can do it because I don't need to edit the code. All I have to do is I know how the templating system works.
Right.
And a lot of the modern things like CMSs, they don't have a templating system. It's all just an app that runs out of code. And so you'd have to change the code in order to change the output. And I can't do that. So I would be committing to like less flexibility and more expense, which again, doesn't mean I wouldn't do it, but it would mean I need something on the other side of it. But you can't do this amazing thing that you really should be able to do. So I guess we need to take that leap. Or the alternative, which is if somebody said, well, it turns out all the like here's something that didn't happen, but almost happened, which is with these processor bugs that have been exploited by the security one, Spectre, and what was the other one? Mertz.
Meltdown.
Yeah, it's just all James Bond things.
I was going to say, Smirsch,
Spectre.
They're all like metahumans in the DC universe or something.
Sure.
Spectre, Meltdown, sure.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. All the virtual machines in hosting servers have to be updated to address that, like, so that you don't have the memory on my server being readable by some other server on the same virtual server box in the Linode setup in Dallas or something, let's say that. It actually came up that we had an incompatibility that we knew about for a long time with a more recent version of the kernel that we didn't, that Greg and I were like, let's just not bother because we don't need to fix that. It's not really causing trouble. And then this thing happened and we get the announcement like, well, you're going to have to update this thing and you're going to have to update this thing. And we're like, uh-oh. I guess we need to do that. And the good news is we did it and it's fine. And it actually fixed some other bugs on the our side of the CMS with not a lot of work. It was just work that we deferred. But like if the day came where somebody said there is a critical security thing that is going to break your movable type forever and it can't not, it, you know, you can't not do it, then that would be a really great reason to go. And that's the old, you know, you lost your platform. That's like, we're literally shutting down. Like if Apple stopped making Logic, I could use it for a little while, but the clock would be ticking that I would right. have to move to some other app. And I would either have to go to Ferrite on iOS or I would have to go to Audition, but the jig would be up at that point.
Right.
So that's the other reason to move is like when you feel like the jig is up.
Wall. Yeah. Well, the interesting flip side of that are apps where, the central functionality is not so specific. The task is portable. I think of writing apps. There are writing apps I prefer. There are writing apps that I use. But honestly, almost all writing apps I can get work done in, right? Like, you sit me down in front of Pages, Word, Bear, OneWriter, Scrivener, any of these things, and I can write pretty much anything totally. I need to write. It's just some things will be better suited and some features are more useful. And there's an argument there for like not letting yourself get dragged down into the weeds of particular functionality because it does beholden you more to one app, right? If you get to a point where you feel like, oh man, I really need this one feature. I really need all these bells and whistles. Then it's like, it makes you less portable. It sort of hardens your neural pathways, I feel like, in a certain way almost, like where it's like, oh, I can't do my work unless I've got this specific tool right here. And that can be detrimental because it does, you lose a certain amount of flexibility, right? Like if you are traveling and you don't have your preferred device with you or you end up using somebody else's mm-hmm. device, like it's tough to like adapt to that. So I mean, you know, it's interesting to see which tasks, obviously something like adding audio is far more technical than writing something, which you could do in a pen and a notebook if you wanted to. But you know, I have far more flexibility in switching back and forth between writing apps than I do for pretty much any other type of tool.
Yep. So, hey, Skype is what we're saying. We're still using it. There are lots of reasons. There was another thing I wanted to bring up was there's a link going around of an ad for FileMaker.
Oh, yeah.
Which led to a lot of people to say, oh, FileMaker still exists. Still and around. Apple, and it's still a wholly owned subsidiary of Apple, by mm-hmm. the way. Apple owns FileMaker. And again, my apologies to the people at FileMaker. They're very nice. But like FileMaker, my impression is FileMaker is one of those companies that exists at this point because people have built things in FileMaker. And it's easier to stay with FileMaker at this point than to do something else. I used to use FileMaker all the time. For me, FileMaker is like a thing that I really used a lot in the 90s,
right?
But it's still there 20 years later, still there, still kicking. I'm sure they've got good customers, but I talked to somebody, different company, database person, who said, you know, oh yeah, that's the reality is that our audience is largely the people who have been standardized on our platform a couple decades ago. And so we maintain them and they keep paying us. And that's how our business runs. And like, there's no growth there necessarily, but, or very little. And that's a challenge. You're like, oh, how do we get people interested in our platform? And maybe you can, maybe you can't, but, there are, and I don't think there's anything bad about this. Like, there are still businesses to be made in supporting old stuff. In fact, I just read this thing about how, it was, so Glenn, our friend Glenn Fleischman, did a book about all sorts of kind of funny things about type and writing and printing. And one, I was reading, I was on a plane this weekend and I was reading, I didn't want to read a novel. I'd read a couple chapters of novels like I needed to break. I read one of Glenn's pieces from his little ebook about that, which is about the source of shouty caps, like all caps. Which I was funny because I always heard that my entree to like using all caps to mean you're shouting. I remember that from back when I was on BBSs as a kid.
Sure.
Because if you had an Apple II Plus, the Apple II Plus didn't have the ability to show upper and lower case. It was all uppercase. And so you would know who had the Apple II Plus because everything they wrote was in all uppercase and it did seem like they were shouting. And so that was always a thing. But I bring this up not because of that, but because Glenn used as an example the fact that the National Weather Service sent out a memo in, I think, I want to say 2016, saying, exciting news, we're going to stop shouting at you. And it was all of the National Weather Service briefings were in all caps. Like all their text files everywhere was in all caps. And what Glenn said was, this is due to the fact that somebody made a technology decision involving teletypewriters in the 20s. And that decision led to a chain of technology events that did not get cleared up so that they could do lowercase letters for 85-ish years. One technology decision.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think of with some of this other stuff. There's no shame in building your business on old tech and supporting people who need it because that old tech sticks around. It really does. And that's okay. It may not be the most exciting thing in the world, but it's important because a lot of this stuff, once it's in a system somewhere and it's working, it's way more expensive or painful or some combination thereof to rip it out than it is to just leave it, even sure. though it's old.
Yeah. No, that makes... There is... I mean, a lot is made of the sunk cost idea, but, you know, there is an argument, too, for, like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah. There's real cost in moving, though, right?
Sure.
I mean, that's not... I mean, there may be a sunk cost if you've bought something and it's terrible, but, like,
right.
I've seen this all the time, where it's, like, you end up in a situation where... what we've got is okay. There is something better, but the cost of going to something better is more than we can spend. So therefore, we won't do it. Like
right.
that's a pretty simple thing. If it's like, well, it'll cost this, it'll take this much time, we can't do that. Therefore, we won't do that, and then life moves on.
Yes. Yeah. Sometimes it's the only option, though.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. When I worked in IT, we had all sorts of like little software. Things that we continue to run even though they were out of date because there was nothing else and critical processes relied on it.
Right.
So yeah.
And some stuff solves itself. I mean, that's the other funny thing,
True.
Thing that I've learned having been through this technology stuff for a couple of decades
Wow.
now is sometimes you're like, oh boy, I really can't lose this thing. And then 5 years pass and you're like, oh, it doesn't matter now.
Right.
Well, it solved itself.
I was thinking about the fact that when you mentioned FileMaker, I was thinking of their late and somewhat lamented consumer-oriented database program, Bento.
Oh, yeah.
And how at the time it came out, I was always like, oh, this is fine, but not great. And then within, like, when I started my freelancing job, I was like, oh, you know what I need is, like, I need, like, a personal database program. And I had Bento had been discontinued several years at that point. And I was like, but I need something kind of like that. And so I went looking, and there was not a lot. There were programs that were kind of aimed at that, but they were not sophisticated enough. Like basically the ground between very, very simple consumer databases and very, very high-end professional databases was pretty sparse. And what it turned out when I thought about it more is that in the intervening time, we have seen so many specific apps and web services designed that fill specific roles for what you would have used that generalizable tool for before. So, for example, if you're a small business owner and you are trying to use something to keep track of your finances, there are a slew of web-based tools to basically help you do that, like specifically
yeah.
help you manage your finances. So you don't need to build your own database to manage your finances. And I think that's true for a lot of other things like media cataloging, right? Like there are specific apps that exist to catalog your media collections if you want to do that. And so the sort of generalizable opportunity for a, you know, mid-range consumer database program kind of went away because most of the main use cases had been sort of peeled off into individual apps and services. And
right.
so I got stuck because I felt like I didn't want to use a web service. None of the specific apps quite handled what I wanted to or do it in the way that I wanted to do it. And so really my only recourse was to end up building my own numbers spreadsheet for it, because even though it didn't fit everything, like, it allowed me the control and flexibility that I wanted. So
yeah, I had that with I had that last year when I was building a mailing list to mail out things to Incomparable members.
Mm-hmm.
And I needed to do match fields and then lookups, mm-hmm. which is something that's fairly straightforward to do in a database. And it took me several hours to figure out what program could I use to do that. Because I thought to myself, surely any spreadsheet program could do this.
Right.
And I actually can't remember. I had thought that I solved it in Excel, and I think maybe I didn't. I think maybe I solved it in Numbers instead. But one of those apps, I did find a way to do it. It was super non-intuitive.
Yeah, right.
And I thought to myself, why is this hard? Like, to say, here's a range, match it to this range, and mm-hmm. then take the match in this column and put it here.
Right.
Like, and the spreadsheets are like, well, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, but I was like, that's a simple database concept, but it was much harder to do.
Spreadsheets are not databases, is what
spreadsheets
what
aren't
we remember
databases.
Now. Yeah.
Spreadsheets.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I remember doing a lot of work back in Microsoft Access way back when I started out my career in tech. And I don't miss that. But
no.
I do miss having the power of database. I'm just, you know, to everyone who's like, roll your own database using, you know, whatever, Postgres or MySQL. It's like, I used to maintain those things. I used to administrate those things. I don't want to do that again
because they're
not friendly CSIS software.
I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that.
Yeah. I went with my own thing. It's cool. But yeah, old software. Sometimes you keep it around for a reason. I had an old version of Pages. I may still have an old version of Pages installed because I still have, there's a version of Pages that can still open the Apple Works files. So
wow,
I still have that one. I think it's the old version before they did the redesign a few years ago to bring everything into sync among quote unquote into sync along the iOS and macOS lines. The only funny part of it is sometimes when I go to type Pages in Spotlight, it sometimes seizes upon that as like, oh, clearly you want to open this really old version of Pages that you have here. No. Why would I do that? Why would that be my most commonly used like scenario? Computers are dumb.
They are dumb. They should stop.
They should stop making computers. That's where, there you go.
Well, the computer should just stop. I don't know what else is going on. You're traveling again. I just traveled. You're traveling.
I'm traveling. My next few months are quite busy travel wise. So this is sort of kicking off, basically through, I want to say the beginning of March or so. Like, I've got like every other weekend traveling or cons, because this is like, for whatever reason, they seem to cluster around the beginning of the year.
So where are you going this
weekend?
Time?
I'm headed to Confusion, which is outside Detroit.
Right. I remember that you were going to go to this,
which is a fun sci-fi fantasy convention, fairly small, but has a good crew going there.
You get to meet people and say hello. I'm published author Dan Morin.
I do. I tend not to lead with that, but yes.
That's no, you work it in later.
Right, exactly.
You know, have you read my published science fiction novel, The Caledonian Gambit, by Dan Morin, who is me.
I carry it around in front of me all the time.
Oh, good.
Just so I lead with that. I literally lead with it.
You can wear your shirt. Well, maybe not this weekend.
I can't. I don't
soon.
Have it yet, but I will be
soon
able to.
Soon you'll be able to wear the shirt. Yeah. Wear the t-shirt. Hand out the bookmarks. It's all marketing.
I've got so much marketing, and it's really almost a little bit sad that, like, I don't know what the future of this franchise is, and I've invested a lot into it. One of the things I think about, speaking of sunk costs at some point, is like, well, I have sold t-shirts, I have made stickers and book plates, I've made stamps, and who knows whether or not this series will continue. I don't know. It's a question. So
I feel strongly that there will be a second book in the series.
Yeah, I think we've discussed that already. That exists, and I'm sure it will surface. But there is a open question as to whether or not, despite having sort of ideas and schematics for what comes after that, you know, if the reader, like, readership doesn't hit a certain level, there's a question of whether or not I can justify spending my time on it. I don't know. I just don't know. So It's a weird, the economics of this business are very strange.
Yeah, I don't really understand it. It's a very strange business. But I know that at some point, speaking of sunk costs, right? It's like if you don't sell enough of book one of a series, you can guess what book two is going to sell, and then it's like, okay,
yeah.
Well.
Yeah,
and there's no point. You'd be better off writing a different book in a different series.
Exactly, and I mean that's the trick with I know a lot of people, and I've done this in the past too. Think to themselves, oh, I'm not going to read another ongoing series. I'm not going to read this until it's done. And the trick, catch 22 there is, if you don't buy the first book, it may not ever get finished. So it really puts you in a bit of a bind. But yeah, it's always an open question of whether you sort of continue with that, because at a certain point there's just diminishing returns. The first book my understanding is the first book in a series is the best selling book in pretty much any series, right? Because even if people abandon it after the first book, they bought the first book. Nothing ever sells as well as that.
Yeah, and it's rare that book three in a series, if it's tied together closely, right?
And there are outliers. You know. If you're George R. R. Martin, you might get it might be a little different. But even there, I'm guessing Game of Thrones probably,
That's
Thrones
not a
better.
Series that you can jump in the middle. I think there are series where you can pick and choose a little bit more, but that's not one of them.
Right. Yeah, and so it's a tough proposition to continue with that when you kind of have the idea that that slope heads downwards. But yeah, nothing is ever written. You never know when somebody might seize upon that thing that you wrote and be like, hey, this is great. And all of a sudden people start flocking in from nowhere. So you gotta just sort of keep an eye on where things are going.
It's good. It's a good thing. I actually just read a book that thanked your agent. So that was kind of funny.
Oh. Yeah, well, he's a nice guy.
Yeah, he gets around.
He gets around. He's a very he's got a lot of clients. So he keeps very busy.
That's good. That's good in the agenting game.
Indeed.
Well, we should probably wrap this up. I don't know how long this call's been going because my call recorder died in the middle of it.
27 minutes and 45 seconds.
It felt
seconds.
Like about a half an hour.
That seemed about right.
All right. Well, thanks to everybody out there for listening to the Secret Podcast, of course. We appreciate your support at Six Colors. And Dan, have a good trip to Michigan.
Thanks. I'll try to avoid any meteors.
Okay, do that. That's a reference. There was a meteor, right?
Yeah, there's a meteor right outside of Detroit.
Meteor, right?
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.